So now that the worship team has lulled you into this sense of peace and comfort and joy, I've got four words for you today. That I think these four words, you know, for some of us, it's going to keep that calm and peace and comfort. But for others, it's going to send us into a time of frenzy and worry that I believe some heads may explode. Those words are, today is December 4th. December 4th. We have 20 days until Christmas Eve. Everybody ready? Ready to go? Getting excited for this? You know, some people are excited about Christmas and the lights and everything that's going on, and they're just feeling good about that. But others are like, you know, how are we going to make this work? We've got gifts to get and places to be, and I got to take time off from work and have some worries that come with that, where others are excited about, you know, getting together with family and enjoying that comfort of each other and eating a good meal. And the other half might be wondering, okay, I'm kind of nervous about getting together with all these people I haven't seen for a while. I got a little anxiety going on and that sort of thing. So this time is conflicted a little bit too. And here at church, we're entering into this time of hope and peace and this Advent season, this great anticipation for what's going to come. And last week, the worship team helped us light this candle of hope with a service of prayer and praise. We had a chance to confess, a chance for thanksgiving, a chance to pray with each other and pray for each other. And this week, we lit the candle of peace. And that's a really good thing, because that's what my message is about. So I'm glad that lined up well here. So we have this peace, you know, and I've got a question for you to think about or to ponder. You know, where does your peace come from? Is there where are you at most at peace? You know, it could be a time. Could be a time or place, maybe. There's a time in the morning that you sit and you enjoy some peace, quiet, or a time at the end of the day when everything is done. Maybe it's a space or a place. Maybe it's a lake home or a spot on the lake or in the woods or something like that where just this peaceful calm comes over you and you feel good about that. Or maybe it's connected to a thing. Maybe it's a cup of coffee gives me peace, or I have an animal at home, a dog or a cat that just, you know, has this comfort to it when I'm around him. Or maybe it's I'm at peace when I'm out on my boat or on the motorcycle. You know, these are peaceful places to be. Or a plan. I mean, we could have a plan that gives us peace. So we've got savings for retirement gives people peace. You know, being able to pay the bills and have a job that gives you enough money to pay these bills gives you peace, or money for college. Or if you've had a health issue going on and something, you meet with the doctor and they put a plan together, that plan can give you peace. So there's a lot of different sources of peace, ways that we can kind of get this peace that are connected to this time and this space and these things, or maybe this plan. But they're a lot of times temporary. They kind of dissolve when that thing goes away, or when that plan goes away, or things don't work out quite right. And then that whole idea of peace sort of just devolves, I guess, into this chaos. So I have a good example for you. Comes from my life. So my wife Jane, she has this time of peace. She has this plan for a time of peace. In the mornings, she'll sit with a cup of coffee and a paper or a Bible or something, and this will be a good peaceful time for her. And I have a plan for peace too. My plan on the weekends especially is to sit down with a good breakfast and sit in my chair and watch a little TV or something and eat this breakfast. So we both have these plans for peace. So one of my favorite things to make for breakfast is pannekuchen. This is a pannekuchen that I made actually yesterday. And if you guys are note takers, if you like writing things down, that kind of stuff, this will be a good time to start because I'm going to give you my recipe for pannekuchen. So we're going to take these three eggs. We're going to put them in a blender. So you got three eggs. You're going to take a quarter cup of milk. Put that in that blender too. Quarter cup of flour. Put that in the blender. Salt, just like two pinches of salt. You mix that up in there. About double that in sugar, so maybe four pinches of sugar, quarter stick of butter. You're going to bake that in the oven for 350 degrees. Oh, 450. Thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. Hot oven. There you go. I like to cook mine on the grill, too, because it gives it a smoky flavor. So just a small little pan. That's about a half a batch of pannekuchen. So I'm going to paint this picture for you. Here's our Saturday morning. Jane, with her coffee and her paper, sitting at the kitchen table with her time of peace. I'm preparing for my time of peace, getting all these things mixed together. I like to mix it in one of those bullet blenders where you push down. So here we are. I got this ready to go, and I push down in that bullet blender, and the loudest, most obnoxious screech comes out of that thing and destroys Jane's peace. She'll look up at me and she'll cry out, "Murderer!" And she is right. I have killed that peace. I've destroyed that peace because I had a plan for peace and they didn't quite match up. They were similar, didn't quite match up. So there's so many examples in the Bible about this peace, and we get our word peace from a Hebrew word, shalom. You guys familiar with that word, shalom? It can mean many things, not just absence of hostility or absence of war. A lot of people think of that as peace, as like, you know, when people stop fighting, then we have peace or something like that. But there's also this peace of just this harmony, a peace of wholeness or of completeness or of prosperity. Welfare is another translation of it, or tranquility. So these are all different ideas of peace that you see in the Bible and through the Hebrew language. I mean, our first example of peace, I mean, starts right out the first page of the Bible, the Garden of Eden. You guys kind of feel like that's a peaceful place? It kind of sets up that way. You know, that first God, you know, He prepares time. He puts all these things in order. The first thing is time. And he called the light day. So now we have time for peace. The second thing he does is he creates this space or this place for peace. We have this space for peace. So he all the waters, you know, separated, and then dry land appeared. And then there's these things that he creates. So he's got this time and place, and then these things. For peace, and the little creatures that scurry along the ground, and the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea, and all these things meant for peace. And then he has this plan to put human in charge of that peace, in charge of that those things, a plan for us to rule over all of the different things he had made. So he's got this order placed out, this order of God, human, and then all these created things. And keeping that order is what helps him establish that peace, helps that peace going. So what happens when we upset that order, when we change that order, when we put these created things between us and God to get our peace? Well, right away in Genesis, you still see this here. The serpent, he was the shrewdest of all the wild animals that God made, and we allowed the serpent to tell us what peace was going to be, to tell us how to gain this peace on our own without God, apart from God, separate from God. So it would be like saying, you know, we're going to put this boat, and that's where we're going to be our source of peace, or this time of day, that's going to be our source of peace, or this bank account, that's going to be our source of peace. And what happens is all your life you'll struggle to scratch a living, scratch that peace out of the world. So, but God, it's a struggle that, you know, David, I love Psalm 8 from David, because what that does is it lays out what God's plan should have been or should be. It kind of paints a great picture. You know, when I look into the night sky, I see the works of your fingers. The moon, the stars are all put into place. What are mere mortals that you should think of us? Human beings that you should care for us. Yet you made us only a little lower than God. You crowned us with honor and glory. You put everything you made, put all of this under our authority, under their authority. The flocks, the herds, all the wild animals, the birds in the sky, the fish in the sea, everything in the ocean currents, everything back in that order. There's a verse from Jeremiah that really helps kind of bring this out as well. They will come home, and this is after God has kind of restored that peace that we upset with listening to those things, those created things. They have come home and sing songs of joy on the heights of Jerusalem. There will be radiant because of the Lord's good gifts, the abundant crops of grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and the healthy flocks and herds. Their life will be like a watered garden. All their sorrows will be gone. Doesn't that sound like good peace to have? This arrangement, this perfect order of God's peace. So the next generation, Cain and Abel. So we're gonna follow through this idea of peace through several parts of the Bible and hope that, you know, kind of see how it develops in each one. And maybe what we can do is look at that ourselves and say, you know what, I kind of get that, how I'm upsetting that order a little bit. So we've got Cain and Abel, the next generation. They're working through that peace. It seems like on the surface, to start out, everything is going well. You know, we have this peace going. We have this harmony. You know, Cain, he's a cultivator of the soil. He's doing what God had intended him to do at the beginning. He said, there's no man to cultivate the soil. So here he is, cultivating soil. Abel, he's ruling the sheep. He's shepherding the sheep. He's keeping them safe. He's moving them to the next good water, good grass. It seems like everything is in harmony here. They bring their gifts to God, so they include God. They go to God with these gifts, you know, praise of what's happening. But this happens. What happens here is Cain's plans for peace don't quite match up for what God has intended for this peace. And Cain feels like he's getting less than he deserves. It would be like us, you know, at work. You know, we feel like maybe we're not appreciated at work. Our contributions aren't being noticed when we're helping people out, or somebody's being noticed above me, kind of thing. And our peace relies on these things. You know, our family's ungrateful, so you know that peace is starting to fall apart in our own life. You know, this peace fades into chaos. In Cain's case, he allows this fear and this anger just to rule over him. And this land that was intended for abundance and provision is turned into a field of blood. This tool, this plow that was intended for a tool of planting is turned into a tool for violence. And then Abel's very blood cries out to God, you know, put things back in order. But God has this plan to put it in order. If we continue through the Bible and read some more verses, we've got Micah 4 that kind of talks about this order, about returning to this order, and then also the result of it. So in Micah 4, the people from many nations will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob's God. There he will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths, and the Lord's teachings will go out from Zion. The Lord will mediate between peoples and will settle disputes between strong nations far and away. And I love this part because it kind of transitions into what the result of God's peace could be for us. They will hammer their swords back into plowshares, just returning this tool of violence to a tool of provision and prosperity. They will take their shears into and put them back into pruning hooks. Nations will no longer fight against each other. They will train for war no more. Everyone will live in peace and prosperity, again, enjoying their own grapevines, their own fig trees, and there will be nothing to fear. The Lord of heaven's armies has made this prophet. So if we continue through the stories throughout the Bible, we see more chances for peace, more chances for us humans, for the humans to create peace here. But what happens is everybody just sort of devolves into the sea of chaos. From Cain's generation to the next generation we're going to talk about, we just keep working our way down and down and down into the sea of chaos. But there's one man, a righteous man, Noah, who's going to rise above this sea. God is going to bring him out of this sea, and he's going to bring him to basically a new Eden, a new creation. So he's going to tell Noah to leave your boat, you know, with all, you and all your wives and all your sons and their wives. Release all the animals. We're going to start this new Eden with the birds and the livestock and the small animals that scurry along the ground, and so they can be fruitful and multiply throughout the earth. We're going to put this back into perfect order. We're going to return this to this order. Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth. All the animals, all these created things, the birds in the sky and the animals that scurry along the ground and the fish in the sea are going to look to human with fear and terror. And God will place all these things in their power. And this family is going to carry this covenant of peace forward, this covenant of tranquility forward. I'm going to confirm my covenant with you and your descendants and with all the animals on the boat and the livestock and the birds and the wild animals and every living creature on earth. But chaos returns. Noah and his family kind of attempt to bring their own idea of an order to things. So there's and the result is a divided family. You know, Noah wakes up from a stupor. He had learned that Ham, his youngest son, what his youngest son Ham has done, and he curses Canaan, the son of Ham. He cursed, you know, may Canaan be cursed. May he be the lowest of the relatives. Now we're establishing this different order. Noah, may the Lord of God, you know, of Shem be blessed, but Canaan is the servant. You know, Japhet, may he share in the prosperity, but Canaan is the servant. So it's instead of ruling together, as one family, bringing this covenant of peace and joy together as one family, we have this tranquility of a nice home disturbed by bickering. We've got, there's a unrest in this family. You know, people aren't getting along. You know, future generations are fighting. Future nations are even fighting. But God has this plan. He wants to bring everything back. He wants to restore this back to this perfect order, so that we can dwell in this peace. So we have Ezekiel 37 kind of shows this plan that's coming. And give them this message from the Sovereign Lord. I will gather people together of Israel among the nations. I will bring them home to their own lands from the places where we have been scattered. I will unify them into one nation on the mounts of Israel. One king will rule them all. No longer will they be divided into two nations or two kingdoms. So this story continues as well. I mean, we keep seeing this nation kind of taking upon themselves what this peace should be and changing this order up of what it is. So this God sets apart this one nation, this nation that can carry his covenant forward. This nation is protected and provided for. You know, the Lord said to Moses, look, I'm going to rain down food from the heaven. So these are the Israelites. They're in the wilderness. And God is going to provide for them. He's rescued them out of Egypt, rescued them out of that slavery, provide this, you know, everything they need for that day. They can pick up as much food as they need for that day. But it's a test. A test whether they'll follow this instruction, the instruction of of taking what God is going to provide for that moment and not worrying about the future or be concerned with the past. But they don't do well at this test, do they? They fail. They start grumbling about what's happening, what's being provided. They grumble and say, "What, you know, God should have just left us in Egypt. We'd been so much better off." Or they grumble and say, "Why doesn't God get us more food than this? So we have food for the next day too." They're unable to live in that moment of peace and prosperity that God is providing right then. You know, for us, it would be looking at like, you know, we've got this peace and prosperity today, but what about tomorrow? What about paying my rent next month? You know, where's that going to come from? You know, if I could get a better paycheck, if I get a second job, get more money, I can finally relax. You know, I can have this money just to relax. Or maybe it's you know, if I would have taken this road, if I would have went to college, things would be so much better. If I would have, you know, taken this job, everything would be better. We're unable to live in that moment of peace and prosperity that God's given us right now, kind of looking forward and looking back. And then we become separated from that peace that he's trying to give us. We start thinking of other things, separated from that peace and prosperity that God is providing. But God has a plan. He has a plan in Micah 5 to everything to be restored to this perfect order so that we can dwell in this peace, starting at verse 2 in Micah 5. "But you, O Bethlehem Ephraim, are only a small village among all the people of Judah. Yet a ruler of Israel, whose origins are from the distant past, will come to you on my behalf. The people of Israel will be abandoned to their enemies until a woman gives birth. Then, at last, his fellow countrymen will return from exile to their own land, and he will stand to lead his flock with the Lord's strength. In the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, then all his people will live there undisturbed. For he will be highly honored around the world, and he will be that source of peace." So it's not easy to let go of this, the peace, you know, the order that we want to create, the plan that we want to create, and enjoy the moment, the time that God has given us now, that time. So what we want to do is we want to ask God to take control and bring order to this, to define peace for us, a champion to lead us, a champion to teach us. In Isaiah 9, I'll return to the beginning here that we had left. As the worship team comes in, we'll do that. "For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. A government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace." So I'm going to return my question to you guys again that we started at the beginning. Where does your peace come from? Are you getting it from these created things, from these created moments? Is that your peace, and then it disappears when that moment changes? Or are you waiting for God to give you this peace? Remember, you know, God did say, enjoy every fruit in the garden. So it's good to enjoy the boat or the extra money or the plan that we have for some this or that. I mean, it's good to enjoy those things, but we don't want our peace just to rest on that. We don't want that plan, that thing to separate us from God and his plan that he has for us in this moment, in this time. So if you would, I'm going to close us in prayer. If you would bow your heads, I want to ask Father God. You know, it's hard for us. We're bombarded constantly with messages about how these created things can give us peace, how these created things can give us completeness and wholeness, and that we need to have this plan, our own plan for prosperity and moving forward. You know, we have this fear of letting go of things, and that can be overwhelming to us. You know, help us lay down our fears. Help us lay down our cares at your feet. And we ask, Holy Father, that you bring us your peace.